Does your love life ever stress you out? Well, maybe you've got it backwards. Maybe it's stress that's causing trouble in your love life. Couples therapist Elizabeth Earnshaw makes this case in the new book, Till Stress Do Us Part, How to Heal the Number One Issue in Our Relationships. Elizabeth is a licensed marriage and family therapist, the founder of A Better Life Therapy, and owner of the popular Instagram account, @LizListens. Here she is to share five of her big ideas.
Hello, I'm Elizabeth Earnshaw, the founder of A Better Life Therapy, a licensed marriage and family therapist, and the author of I Want This to Work and Till Stress Do Us Part. I'm going to share with you five big ideas for my newest book, Till Stress Do Us Part. When I first opened my therapy practice, I purchased a small, beat-up, two-seater couch from the IKEA as-is section. It was $50 and all I could afford. A friend helped me carry that couch up to the 15th floor of a city building and shove it into my tiny office. Since then, hundreds of couples have sat on that couch asking me to help them repair their most important relationships. Here are five lessons I've learned in the past 15 years about what is really pulling people apart: high levels of stress in and outside of their relationships, and what we all can do about it. Insight 1. It's not you, it's the stress. Often, people come into my office confused about why they are fighting so much. These are couples who love and respect each other, but just can't seem to get along in daily life. Some describe themselves as withdrawn from each other, others experience frequent verbal arguments, and yet others experience a mix of both. A dance of yelling at each other only to retreat to their rooms, to scroll on their phones, watch TV, or read a book. Anything to avoid each other. These couples will blame many things: their partner's upbringing, their lack of communication skills, or an incompatible attachment style. And, of course, these factors can have an influence on how people get along. However, I often see a different culprit hiding beneath the surface, a culprit no one seems to initially point their finger to. It's stress. Study after study shows that stress reduces our ability to connect with our partners because of how it impacts both our physiology and mind. When people are under stress, their body changes by sending adrenaline and cortisol throughout the system. These hormones increase heart rate, usually 100 beats per minute or more, impact our internal organs — have you ever noticed that you need to pee more when you're nervous — and send signal to our brain that we're not safe. Because of these signals, our brain starts to think differently. A person under stress begins to lose relational capacities like humor, affection, curiosity, listening skills, and problem solving. This makes sense for the original intended purpose of these threat responses. It's not very helpful to laugh at a joke, for example, if you're being chased by a lion. You need to be focused, and you need to focus on your own safety. However, these responses can be really problematic in our relationships. As people bear the burdens of stressors outside of their relationship, like endless traumatic news cycles, fear of layoffs, and rude neighbors, and the stressors inside of their relationships, like disagreements about how to manage finances or a lack of intimacy that makes them feel unwanted and unloved, they're caught in a chronic stress state. This means that they will be less likely to respond to their partner with grace and more likely to attach their focus to negative attributes. In order to begin to change the impact stress has on your relationship, it's important to first recognize who the real enemy is, the endless stress, and to work as allies against it rather than against each other. Insight 2. Your nervous system gets the first word. A few years into Katie and Jim's relationship, Jim lost his job, which put both of them in a predicament, as their expenses were greater than their new one-income household could bear. Immediately, both Jim and Katie felt the stress and threat of losing the income, and both of them responded from a place of fear. Jim became withdrawn and distanced, and Katie became argumentative and critical. "You should have seen this coming and had a plan B," she would say to Jim as she rolled her eyes and grimaced. Jim couldn't see the fear beneath her words or her expressions, but he felt his own. His fear and shame created a threat response within him that led him to retreat to the basement and play more video games. It was too overwhelming to even consider how to climb out of the hole he felt he had fallen into. While Katie liked to have the last word, their nervous system had the first word with both of them. As Katie and Jim continued to manage the loss of Jim's job this way, they grew further apart, created inaccurate and negative narratives of each other in their own minds, and were never able to sit down together to discuss the issues at hand, face the problem together, and come up with a game plan and solution. Like many couples, Katie and Jim didn't know that their reactions were related to living in a stressed state. Their narrative was that Katie was mean and Jim was lazy. They pointed fingers at each other as the problem rather than addressing the root cause, their financial issues. If Katie and Jim were able to understand how their nervous system works, they would be able to pause, self-soothe, and offer soothing words to each other. They would know that none of their financial issues would get solved until they first reassured the other person that they could be trusted. To move forward, Katie would need to recognize that what Jim's nervous system really needed was support and reassurance, and Jim would need to know that Katie needed the same. To move forward, Katie would need to recognize that what Jim's nervous system really needed was support and reassurance, and Jim would need to know that Katie needed the same. When Katie criticized Jim, it only tells him his nervous system is unsafe, and that's never going to lead to the results that she wants. And when Jim disappears to the basement, he tells Katie's nervous system that she's unsafe too. She's unsafe with Jim because she's been abandoned by him. Each partner has a job to remind their partner's nervous system, "You're safe with me." This helps the body move into a relaxed state in which cortisol and adrenaline drop and our ability to see the big picture and communicate returns. Each partner has a job to remind their partner's nervous system, "You're safe with me." This helps the body move into a relaxed state in which cortisol and adrenaline drop and our ability to see the big picture and communicate returns. Insight 3, mind the gap. When Andrew and I had been married for a few years, we had taken on a lot: a dog, a child, a house, in a business. We tried to maintain our hobbies, our health, and our friendships, but we also kept adding more. Andrew joined a wedding band and I started sharing relationship advice online. I volunteered with a mental health organization and hired new employees for my practice. Living in Andrew's hometown meant endless social opportunities for him. He was invited to join a local recreational softball team with his high school friends, and I encouraged him to do it. "Are you sure?" he asked. "I know you've been struggling and that you're really tired at the end of the day." I smile and nod. "I'm sure it's going to be good for you." Twice a week, Andrew would come home, give me a kiss, throw on his softball gear, and run out while I seethed. Why am I so upset? This is who we are. We support each other's hobbies. Over time, I started blaming everything for his time away, his friends, and even softball. It made me less inclined to spend time with them and less interested in watching the games. At that time, I knew it was time to take inventory of my own contributions to the problem. Was it really his friend's fault? Probably not. In fact, it was actually the gap, the distance between what we value, wish for, and believe in, and what our reality can actually support. While I wanted to be the supportive wife, I just couldn't be that person then. It was painful to choose between my ideal and my reality. Our fast-paced society has inundated us with the idea that we can have everything and do everything if we only try hard enough. This has resulted in stressed-out families who feel that they're never good enough. Many of us believe that there must be some recipe to fill the gap between how much money we have and how much money we want, or between how much time we have to offer our job and how much time we wish we could offer our spouse. But there's no magical recipe. Either we bridge those gaps often to our own avail, we spend time, money, and energy that doesn't serve us, or we decide not to bridge the gap and we sacrifice something that we want but we can't have. When we do the former, we tend to stress ourselves out in the long term, and our relationships get the brunt of it. When we do the latter, we feel stressed in the meantime, but later down the road, we find more peace, fulfillment, direction, and simplicity. Doing the latter, choosing to sacrifice something we want but can't have, is sometimes no easy task. It might cause feelings of grief or disappointment. It might make other people angry. I call these sacrifices intentional sacrifices because we have to make a conscious commitment and choice to sacrifice one thing in order to enjoy another thing and save our sanity. There are so many stressors in life that we cannot control, illnesses, death, the economy, that it's important to take control where we can. And one of those places is learning to identify where you're pushing yourself too hard to build a bridge between your gaps. There are so many stressors in life that we cannot control. Illnesses, death, the economy. So it's important to take control where we can. And one of those places is learning to identify where you're pushing yourself too hard to build a bridge between your gaps, only to find that the bridge makes everything else in your life fall down. In order to prevent our endless attempts to bridge the gaps, we must learn to identify our values and end goals so that we can use those as our North Star when making decisions in our relationships. Insight 4, choose where your energy goes. Andrew and I had a long day at work, and we were plopped in front of the TV. The news was blaring in the background, but we were not paying attention. Instead, we were glued to something much more captivating, our phones. We craved connection, but we weren't prioritizing it with each other. Instead, we were finding it everywhere else. Connection to world news, connection to strangers on Instagram, connection to our jobs through the Gmail app, and connection to friends through iMessage. Suddenly, I want to connect with Andrew. I look up and I scoff. If we're going to sit together, can you at least put your phone away? What? Andrew says. You've been on your phone the entire time. I just picked mine up because you had yours. Frustrated, I know he's right. I haven't managed my phone use well. When I get tired, I just want to scroll, but I know it does nothing for me. Our phones feel like another partner in the room, one we compete with for attention. You're right, I admit. What should we do instead? We decide to watch a show together. Phones go in another room, and we laid side by side on the couch. We were tired, so we didn't need to talk or do anything active. Just being together with our shared attention was enough. Protecting our relationships from time, emotional, financial, and physical energy drains is an important commitment to make. This provides a type of buffer of protection that Stan Tatkin, the founder of Psychobiological Approach to Couples Therapy, also known as PACT, calls the couple bubble. It's a protective cocoon that shields partners from stressful outside elements. Many couples pierce their cocoon with poor boundaries, weakening their relationship. Maybe they take advice from outsiders about their partner, or they spend money without agreement. They might overuse substances or dedicate too much time to work or hobbies, or, like Andrew and I did, our phones. Tatkin calls these outside forces thirds, anything that threatens your connection by draining energy, resources, and trust. It could be hobbies, in-laws, the workplace, substances, friends, and so on. To protect our relationships, we must identify and manage these thirds, because when we do, they empower us and strengthen our bonds. Mismanagement, however, leads to struggle. Now, what does this have to do with stress? When we're not managing our thirds, we create more stress between us as partners, and we also don't manage the stress coming in from the outside world. And so we're stressed out together, but we're also being inundated with stress from everywhere else. Managing thirds means managing your stress and recognizing the impact. It means working together to protect your relationship from all the things on the outside that can burden us. It's about prioritizing each other in a world full of distractions. You can start to manage thirds in your relationship by thinking of all of the thirds in your life and then rating them based on how much of an impact they have on your relationship and your stress levels. 1 has the lowest impact and 5 has the highest impact. Insight 5, create a system. Stress makes life feel chaotic. Developing a system can help create a sense of stability and calm. To start creating a system, you'll need to make your stress visible. This means sitting down with your partner and writing out the stressors, big and small, that you are experiencing. Then, create three metaphorical baskets. The first basket is called shedding, the second is called preventing, and the third is called adapting. Think about the stressors on your list that you can shed. This might be anything you are paying for that you don't actually need, tasks that you can outsource, or obligations you've taken on out of obligation, but don't really have the time or energy to commit to. Put everything that's on your list that fits this definition into the shedding category and make a commitment to work on unloading each thing on the list. Sometimes it's easy to shed the things in this category, and sometimes it's really hard and it's going to take some time and planning. Next, look at your list and identify which of your stressors could have been prevented. Maybe you are stressed out each morning and you're arguing with your partner because your kids never get out of the door on time. Consider if this stressor could have been prevented by putting out clothes the night before or making lunches ahead of time. Anything that could be prevented by planning and systemizing should go into the prevention basket. Finally, add any stressor that you have no control over into the adapting category. These stressors are the stressors that happened to you. While you might not be able to just chuck them into the trash bin or prevent them with some good planning, you can still change the way they impact your well-being. This is where self-regulation and co-regulation skills and a strong commitment to have each other's backs comes into play. After you've filled your three baskets, talk with each other about how to begin organizing your stressors. What are some easy things you could shed? Which are going to take long-term planning? Is there something you could start preventing today? And what do you need from each other to begin to adapt to life's difficulties as collaborators, helping each other to feel safe and secure in an otherwise chaotic world? Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy Till Stress Do Us Part.
Thank you, Elizabeth. That was Elizabeth Earnshaw with five big ideas from Till Stress Do Us Part, how to heal the number one issue in our relationships. Also, check out our book bite for It's Not Me, It's You, Break the Blame Cycle, Relationship Better by John Kim and Vanessa Bennett. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.